not.
Vito.
Those circuses on the air.
And the president doesn't.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Ah! We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Charles has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And live from the Skyline Studios, Dave Schwann joins us. Dave, what's going on, buddy?
Dave, how you doing? We made it through January.
It's big Super Bowl weekend. We talk commercials already. I think we're going to be talking a little bit about the halftime shows today, because there's a history there.
Oh, there's a big history, you bet. First, not to mention the commercials, too.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Here's year 600. We're going back in history here. Pope Gregory the Great decreed, "God bless you" is the correct response to a sneeze. That's where that came from. And there you have it, right there.
And I don't think there were any Academy Award nominations in 600 AD.
No, there are probably not. Probably nothing there. 1768, mustard first manufactured in America, and that was in Philadelphia.
Mustard.
Mustard, as we know it today. In Philly, yep.
Huh.
1792, you know this is a sore subject for me, the U.S. Postal Service was created. Postage was 6 to 12 cents, depending on distance. That was a lot of money in 1792.
That was a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Geez, I remember mailing letters for 8 cents. And if it was airmail with the fancy border around the envelope, maybe it was maybe a dime.
But they lose hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions, even billion dollars a year at the post office. When is it? Like, if that was a business, it would have been gone 20 years ago. I mean, it is a business, but if it was a private or public business, it would have been gone. Government, we just flush that money down the toilet. There's got to be a different way. How come FedEx and UPS can figure it out?
Well, you would think that there would be more, you know, more of a profit margin for the post office, considering how much online buying is done these days.
But how much do you get in the mail as far as bills are concerned, or magazines?
Oh, next to nothing. Oh, I get some magazines. Okay. I still do. I get a couple of magazines.
I get a couple.
A couple.
Because I still like sitting down and reading.
Yeah. Dave, the vast majority of things I get is the so-called junk mail ads.
Yeah.
Things you're not going
to
use.
Which is going to come to a halt at some point.
Yeah.
And you know, you got to think about all you're going to
Several years ago, they were talking about halting mail on delivery on Saturday.
But that could do happen. Without. I could do without. I'm okay.
To save money.
Deliver mail on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm fine.
Every other day.
Something's got to be figured out there. 1903, the first teddy bear was introduced in America. It was made by a company called Morris Rose Mitchum. What is the history on the teddy bear?
Well, I would imagine it has something to do with Teddy Roosevelt.
It was. That's exactly right. It was named after Roosevelt, who was our president at the time. 1906.
He had that big round face with that ear-to-ear grin.
He did.
Cuddly.
He was a big guy.
Teddy bear image.
Was he cuddly, Dave?
I don't know.
All right. I'm just asking. 1906. Kellogg and Company found Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flakes, later Kellogg's. That was the very beginning. And I believe the history goes where they left some things that they were baking in the oven out too long.
Yeah.
And decided to...
Things were done by mistake.
Yeah.
And then it turned out, hey, this is pretty good.
Somebody grabbed it, you know, chomped on it and went, you know, let's figure out how do you soften these again? Well, milk.
Yeah.
Let's put it on milk. And you think about that's one of the really the first cereals.
It was the first or one of the first, as we know, cereals. Yes.
Well, let's listen to a classic Kellogg's commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Even if Superman did deliver Kellogg's Corn Flakes, he'd have a tough time keeping everybody happy. More people run out of them every morning than any other cereal. Because Kellogg's Corn Flakes taste best to more people. Always have, still do. Don't run out at your house. Remember, any time you buy cereal of any kind, pick up a spare package of Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
All right, 1913, the first prize inserted into a Cracker Jack box. How, you know, as a kid, that was a big deal, Cracker Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
especially sure. The baseball game. Still is, you know, mm-hmm. You know, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. Still at the baseball parks. But the prize was a big deal. With all the stuff that kids have today, they don't give a damn about the prize.
No. As I recall, Dave, you know, get a box of Cracker Jack, and the prize was just like a little figurine of
yeah,
a guy
or ring
walking around.
Or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now you're really sparking a memory here.
Yeah.
We used to fly kites. We had a big field not far from where we lived, and my friends and I would go out and fly kites, and we would tape those guys onto the kites and pretend they were astronauts.
Oh, that's cool. All right. That's cool. That's cool. Oh, I get that.
You know, and then we'd reel them in, you know, welcome home, successful voyage.
But think about all the Smart Pops and the different types of popcorn and caramel-covered chocolate vanilla that you can just buy in a bag in a store the way they're preserved today. Or, you know, just being in Chicago, having Garrett's popcorn and Chicago mix and all that other good stuff that, knowing that Cracker Jack, you know, that box was probably made months ago, it's not as fresh. Like, I don't know if it still has the same, you know, cachet it used to have.
Nor do I know if they had any usage dates, you know, a sell-through date on those, especially when we were kids.
That's right. All right, so 1931, Alka-Seltzer was introduced. And, you know, the mascot is what stands out most, probably not for an entire generation, although it came back a little bit a few years ago for some commercials. It was a animator called, his name was Robert Watkins. He worked for Wade Ad Agency. It was 1952, and he created, it was first called Sparky, which you think with Alka-Seltzers, you know, whatever.
Sparkling water. Yeah.
But Speedy ended up being the name because it obviously is the speed relief that you get from taking Alka-Seltzer.
You worked too hard. You ate too much. The cheesecake made you greedy. Let your aching head and stomach hear this message from old Speedy. Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Those Speedy bubbles relieve your upset stomach and headache fast. For acid indigestion alone, Alka-Seltzer Gold. Oh, what a relief it is.
All right, 1933, the first issue of Newsweek magazine was published.
Newsweek.
Okay. Yep.
That would have been after Time.
It would have been, time was much earlier.
Much earlier.
1944, Batman and Robin, the comic strip, premiered in newspapers. Batman, the TV series, premiered on television with Adam West and Burt Ward in 1966. I only saw him in the reruns, but you remember watching it the first night it was on.
First night it was on. I was in fourth grade, Dave. And what was so clever about it was they would have a cliffhanger. It was a two-parter.
Oh, sure.
You know, so the first night, you know, will the Caped Crusader and the Boy Wonder survive? And you waited until the next night to see how they were going to get out of the predicament they were in.
Yeah, how brilliant was that?
It was marvelous.
Yeah.
And the next day at school, that's all you talked about.
That was the water cooler moment. I love that.
More than a water cooler moment. It was like the teacher trying to settle us down the first hour of class.
But not waiting a whole week for it was pretty cool. I mean, I watched it in reruns where I saw it every day, so I was spoiled
comparatively. So the second part would be on in an hour time frame.
Or it was a full hour of Batman, so I'd catch it right away.
Right.
Exactly,
sure.
Exactly. Well, you know, I had the honor of interviewing Adam West in 2016, about a year before he left us. Let's take a listen to our old chum.
Old chum.
I had to. I had
to. You really nailed that dialogue.
Thank you.
David, I couldn't have said it better than you did, believe me. That was the best introduction all day.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Well, I know you read Batman comics as they came out when you were about 11 or 12 years old, and I know you're a comic book buff. There was a Batman serial in the theater in the 1940s, a couple of them, actually, that were long forgotten. But, I mean, they came and left pretty quickly. But this
I was too young to even see them.
Yeah, right. You were. And this TV series, though, introduced the character to really millions. I mean, this was the one that really put Batman on the map.
Yes, and it sold a lot of comic books, you know, really revived that comic book thing, and sold a lot of TV sets.
It did. Oh, it absolutely did. And it's amazing to me because the comic books that were out back then were still kind of the classic comic books that we all grew up with. And it was only recently that Batman 66 came out from DC Comics that has your likeness in it. I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen it in a comic book like that.
Well, it's happening more and more. And I think it's, you know, so much time has gone by. And as a senior superhero, this is a great tribute.
Absolutely is. And you know there's a Chicago connection to the beginnings of Batman on ABC. Yale Udoff, who was an ABC executive, attended a party at the Playboy Club in Chicago where they were playing the old serials that we were just talking about in the club.
Yeah.
And that gave him the idea to kind of push it, to take it to ABC and do something with it.
They were so attracted to it and amused by it that their hunch paid off.
It did. It absolutely did. Who decided to play the role of Batman in the series itself a little campier? Was it yourself? Was it William Dozier? Was it kind of a group decision that this is where we were going to take this series?
Well, we shaped the show as a social satire and a tongue-in-cheek comedy, really, for adults. And not for children, you know, they could enjoy all that other stuff. But as you got older, you caught the references and the gags. And I think it was Lorenzo Semple Jr. who wrote those first scripts, and our late executive producer, Bill Dozier, and myself. And we just got together and decided on a tone for the show.
Now, you did the pilot with Frank Gorshin as the Riddler, one of the first villains we'll talk about. Did some of the fans, when the series first came out, did they expect it to be more serious, like Superman and the Lone Ranger, than what was portrayed?
Well, I think it probably did, and among certain people at the studio who didn't understand
right.
what we were doing.
Right.
And it took, you know, several months of just doing our thing to convince them.
Now, the show I know was going to be an hour-long show, but it was decided to split it up into two nights as a cliffhanger, which I don't think anyone has done even since then with a television series. It kind of brought back the old movie serials of, you know, you were kind of at the edge of your seat, and you didn't have to wait a whole week to get the ending.
Yeah, that was the homage to DC Comics and, the old comic books.
Well, Sunday is the Super Bowl. Most watch the game, but many watch the commercials and stay focused for the halftime show. I'm going to say, you know, when we've had Super Bowl parties, and we have a tiny one every single year, a few people come over, Josh's friends come over, they usually take that time, they turn up the music, and they go play basketball in the backyard or burn off some steam because they're sitting there watching the game the entire time. But I noticed my daughter is most entertained by that, almost like when the Grammys are around. They want to sit down as a free concert.
Mm-hmm.
But it moves very, very quickly. And people have to remember, like, back in the day when Super Bowl halftime shows really began, the late 60s, 70s, it was marching bands.
Yeah.
That's all we had.
Right. That was pretty much the entertainment for college games, still is, and NFL games. So they just carried over into Super Bowl.
Nobody thought about doing a concert. Really until, I mean, the 70s, there was a little trickle of that. The 80s, we were talking about.
It evolved quite a bit.
I've got a list here of the top Super Bowl halftime shows ever. Top 12. And when I mention the names and you think about these are the bands that did perform at the show, like I want to go back and look at these shows.
Sure.
Right?
And you can probably find them on YouTube.
Yeah. Number 12 was the Rolling Stones. That was back in 2006, and he yelled to the audience when he was ready to play Satisfaction, "This one we could have done in Super Bowl I."
Yeah.
They were asked
they
to play.
Could have easily done it in Super Bowl I.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he did Start Me Up. I mean, when you think about that music, the Rolling Stones at the Super Bowl, how cool that is. That was 2006. Number 11... Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. That was back in 2009. 12 minutes. I mean, that's really what the halftime show is. So you're jamming. You think about Average song is 3-4 minutes. I mean, you don't get a lot. That's why there's medleys.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's one right after another.
They don't finish. No, they don't even finish a song. Yeah. They keep going. But, you know, them and, you know, having the E Street Band there, that's spectacular. They did Born to Run, 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Glory Days, Born in the USA. I mean, it was, again, at one after the other in all this. Number 10, Aerosmith, Britney Spears, NSYNC, Nelly, and Mary J. Blige, all in the same show. MTV produced the halftime show at the time.
Oh, they did.
Which is smart.
Well, sure.
When there was music on MTV, by the way. But, you know, Aerosmith was still making albums. The mashup of NSYNC, Nelly, and Britney doing Walk This Way with the Bad Boys from Boston. Yeah, when you think about those bands being together in one Super Bowl show, how spectacular.
Yeah.
And again, exactly. We got Maroon 5 last year.
Well, they've had the biggest names of the given eras.
Yeah.
That you are going through there. One of my favorites of recent years is Madonna and Lady Gaga.
Oh,
The recent,
spectacular.
Recent Super
Bowls. It was spectacular.
Yeah.
And people are always going to complain anyway. Oh, she looked running fast enough, or she wasn't.
Right.
She's like 80. She's like, you know, she's older now.
The other thing, being kind of a geek about this kind of thing, is I'm always amazed that this is live TV, how quickly that is set up and taken down.
Transformed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not damaging the field.
No.
Because I think about that too. There's a lot of people running out into the field, and you think, well, they're just going to rip the thing up.
And they have an audience of invited guests on the field, you know?
But I think they cover it. I think they cover a big chunk of it very quickly while they do some of the post-game stuff.
But they are in and out.
Yeah, in and out. After Nipplegate, which was in 2004. Enter Paul McCartney. Well, that's what everybody calls it. Paul McCartney came in, so... why don't we do it in the road? Drive My Car, Live and Let Die. And Paul McCartney again and at the Super Bowl.
What I'm saying, yeah.
J Lo's big though. I mean, J Lo's going to be a big show.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah.
Number 7, Madonna with Nicki Minaj, CeeLo. This was 2012. Number 6 is U2 from 2002. I was kind of ticked that they didn't play Sunday, Bloody Sunday. I mean, it was Super Bowl Sunday. You'd like to hear that song when they were doing it.
Maybe they left that out. Think about it, Dave.
Yeah.
Super Bowl 2002, less than
right
6
after
months 9/11. After 9/11.
Yeah, right after 9/11. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Where the Streets Have No Name was on there, and there was a big Stars and Stripes thing. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Still thinking about that, obviously, at that time. Number 5 was Katy Perry with Lenny Kravitz and Missy Elliott. See, I like this mashup thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Old school, new school, some different music. That was 2015. Greatest entrance in Super Bowl history, some say. Number 4, Janet Jackson. Now, number 4, Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, P. Diddy, Kid Rock, Jessica Simpson, and Nelly. That was in 2004. That's when everything blew up. Watergate, Spygate, Deflategate. And what I just said earlier, it was her right boob that got exposed to some 144 million viewers.
And the TV stations that repeated the wardrobe malfunction, I understand, were fined.
Oh, big time.
Some of them, but for each time they showed it, not just once, but if they showed it two or three times. Mm-hmm. They were fined.
In highlights in the news or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, some FCC complaints get a handful of complaints, you know, maybe a couple hundred. They got almost a quarter of a million.
Quarter of a million over that
complaints back
probably
then.
The biggest the FCC.
And that became the word, you know, wardrobe malfunction in all of this. And people were talking about that during the game. And people were asking if it was a conspiracy. Like, did they intend to do that to draw attention to themselves and get Janet Jackson back into the news
into the
and all
spotlight.
That other stuff.
Yeah.
But there are theories still to this day about that. Months later, Letterman had Jackson on his show, and he asked her, how was Tito? Jackson. that was his first question, and she just shook her head.
How's Tito?
Number 3, speaking of which, Michael Jackson, 1993. That was the whole Pepsi thing.
Yes,
that he did, and he got burnt, I think, doing it in rehearsals and so forth. Number 2, Beyonce. So that was 2013.
That was another good one.
It was another great show. That's how I'm kind of looking at J-Lo this year.
Yeah,
that we're going to kind of be in that
good,
same
good
spot.
Good analogy,
2013. Number 1, do you have a guess on number 1?
Number 1, boy, you hit Paul McCartney, you hit the Stones, you hit Springsteen.
Most lists have Prince at the top of the list.
Prince.
Prince, 2007, okay. Did all of his hits, of course, on stage. And Safe, again, you think Prince 25 years ago wasn't safe mm-hmm. to put on stage, mm-hmm. and he certainly was at this point.
So you remember a couple of years back now, they did a hologram of Prince.
Oh, that's right. When it was in Minnesota.
When it was in Minneapolis. Yes.
When it was in Minnesota.
Some people didn't like it. I thought it was pretty neat.
Actually. It was neat. It was very cool. Super Bowl Sunday coming up this weekend. And just a little reminder, don't forget to listen to the Sinatra Hours Sunday morning, 6:30 to 9, right before Uncle Dean. Always a pleasure, Dave.
You bet, Dave.
See you next week.
Okay. What a wonderful world this would be.